Hello and welcome to our second Governor podcast. We're the Education Durham Governor Training group and team, and we're guests as well today, and you're very welcome to our podcast where we're going to be talking about governors and the very, very topical issue of remote education. My name's Gabrielle Reddington. I'm one of Education Durham's leadership advisors. You may have met me delivering governor training or visiting your school over the years talking about different things. I've got for you today a fantastic cast for our governor discussion this morning from all over the service, actually, because I know that colleagues in governor services last time really appreciated hearing from lots of different people. Behind the scenes, we've got our technical whiz Donna recording our podcast for us and making it all happen, so we're very grateful. But I'm going to go round the table and I'm going to start with one of my leadership advisor colleagues who's rejoined us from podcast number one. So I'm really pleased she's here.
Thank you very much, Gabrielle, and lovely to be here again this morning talking to governors on the podcast. So as Gabrielle said, I'm one of the other leadership advisors. So I predominantly work with primary schools, and I am in close contact with about 25 primary schools across Durham. Thank you.
And Pam, of course, you're also, she's been very modest here about her massive, massive amount of work she does. And Pam's also a chair of governors, aren't you, Pam? And you've been a governor for many years, like myself, around different schools and things. So Pam's selling herself short there, I think, a little bit. Now, if we were doing this and we could give pictures, governors, this morning of where we are, I'm heading up to what I'm sure is a very snowy landscape for my next colleague, who's far, far away. But by the miracle of technology, we're all here in the same room without ever getting our feet wet, because it's a snowy day today. I should have said that, shouldn't I? It's the 14th of January. It's the snow day, if you want to place that in your mind's eye, governors, if you're listening to the podcast. So off over to a colleague of mine who's, we've worked together a really long time. Paul, could you introduce yourself?
Hello, yes, my name's Paul Hodgkinson, and I've worked in Education Durham for some considerable time, and I deal, I suppose, with IT and on online safety, and I also work with the technical team that that make the internet provision and provide a lot of the computing equipment and setup for schools. So I form like an interface, if you like, between the things. And Gabrielle's right, there's about a foot of snow here as I look out the window. It's an absolutely gorgeous day if you're not going anywhere.
Fantastic. And Paul, you know, you're no stranger to our governors in Durham, are you? Because you run so much training around online safety and just your really useful hints and tips for governors around that whole angle of safeguarding, don't you? So I'm sure you're a familiar face if governors could see you, I'm sure.
I think so, yes. It includes data protection as well. So I know absolutely. Quite a lot of governors have done data protection training. I'm afraid it's me that does that.
And I think you're on again soon, aren't you, in a few weeks' time. And I'm really pleased this morning that one of our senior governance clerks has joined us. And these are our experts in governance in the service. So I'm really pleased she's here. Diane, you're very welcome. Would you like to say hello to our whoever's joining us today?
Yes, I'm Diane Patterson. I'm one of the senior governance clerks, as Gabrielle said. I've worked for Education Durham for many, many, many years, about 20-odd. And I'm actually, as I say, I'm a senior governance clerk, but I'm also doing the governor training at the moment as well. This is a convent role. So as I say, a lot of you will be familiar with me. A lot of you, as I say, have been to your governor body meetings before as well.
So yeah. I hope you've got a sense of who's here with you. And you know, really thank you to colleagues for taking time in what I know is an incredibly busy time. And we know it's a really busy time for governors as well, especially because of the changes that have happened around the expectations about remote education. I thought it might be quite useful if we just sort of got a few of the key terms out of the way that are flying around at the moment, because there's as always in education, a whole new world of jargon has sprung up, hasn't it, in relation to remote education, and there might be some changes there. And I made a little list this morning of some of the things I've heard my schools talk to me about this week already. So I thought I'm going to put the panels on their through the paces, governors, and just see who can give us a quick explanation of some of these. And I'm going to, governors, you can't see them, I'm going to make them put their hand up if they're going to tell me what these things are. So just imagine we're on University Challenge here. So the first group of key terms governors might hear are things like Microsoft Teams, Google Classrooms, Google Hangouts, Zoom meetings. Now, who's going to jump in on that one and tell us what they all are? Oh, Diane's very excited.
Go on, Diane.
Tell us about that one.
Yeah. To be fair, governors should be very familiar with Teams because the vast majority of our meetings, it's basically an online platform that we can use for holding meetings with a group of people. Whereas previously we would have obviously gone into the schools. We can arrange a meeting now using everybody's technology. So on your laptops where you've got your webcams, we can set up our governors' meetings on the Teams system. And there's also, as I say, there's other systems that are out there. You know, so we are legally obliged to say that other things are available, such as Zoom, which is another version. The Google Hangouts, personally, I haven't used that, but as I say, I know that one is available as well.
And of course, schools are using these different methods, often for delivering live lessons or even assemblies or story times. So lots of different ways of using that. And so you might hear that governor's talking about there. Now, I'm going to ask Pam about the next one because I happen to know, because in addition to this, in addition to everything Pam's already doing, she's also got her own homeschool running at home as well. So I know that the next one she's no stranger to, not just as a teacher and a head teacher, but as a mum as well, at videoed lessons and explanations. Pam, what do governors need to know about those?
Absolutely. So live lessons, are we talking about live lessons or no, videoed lessons?
Videoed lessons, Pam.
Videoed
lessons.
Okay, so I mean, obviously I've got experience, as Gabrielle says, as a mum. I've got a year three child at home learning. The explanations and the videoed lessons are really good for him because it means that I can work at the same time, he can sit next to me if need be, and access those lessons as and when. So it doesn't depend on our Wi-Fi or our broadband at the time, so that he can access it as and when he needs to. So if he needs support, then I can support him to access the lesson online. So that might be recorded by maybe White Rose Maths, or it might be an Oak Academy lesson, or it might even be a lesson that the class teacher themselves have uploaded onto the online platform. Those explanations are really important, and my children get a real sense of belonging when they have those videoed lessons, when they're accessing those, because they like to see or at least hear the class teacher's voice. So that's really valuable. That's what those videoed lessons or explanations are.
Yeah, and certainly with our very young children in school, we know schools are using lots of videoed phonics sessions, which are recorded so that families can access them, whenever suitable in the day. And at the other end, if you're a governor in a secondary school, and as a mum with a secondary school child downstairs, I have to say that I've found the recordings of explanations of how to apply physics equations at GCSE indispensable. Pam, I can see you've got another example.
Yes, my year seven son, he often goes on something called Hegarty Maths, and that's really valuable to him. And there's lots of sort of other online YouTube explanations and so on and so forth that he's been directed to, which he can pause, think, and then restart once you've understood that explanation. Very valuable.
I think the other thing that governors may hear reference to is that schools are sending out learning packs. So if you like, literally paper packs, it might be a set of exercise books. Some schools have a set of exercise books for week A, which come back into school, and a set of exercise books with worksheets for week B that swap over. But all these things, whether they're on paper, whether they're online, whether they're live, whether they're recorded, these are things that are all part of remote education, aren't they? And I think that's one of the first things for governors. It's so important that actually there's a huge variety. Your head teachers and leaders, you know, they're thinking really carefully about what's best for the children and community in the school where you serve. And it's different for everybody. The final one I just want to mention, and Paul, I'm going to ask you about this one, because I think even more of these have become available, haven't they? The different apps that schools might direct children to for different types of things.
Yes, there's lots and lots of different learning apps out there. The schools, sometimes they're bought ones, sometimes they're free ones, and they mean that children have got access to almost immediate feedback as well, because lots of these apps will actually look at the child's response and then market and provide them with information about the next steps. So there's some really good ones out there for children to use.
There are. Sometimes there's so many, it's actually making the choice, isn't it? And I think that that's one of the, if we just start to think about what do governors really need to think about and know about remote education at the moment, I think there's two things that are really important for me, is that actually it's about being up to date and making sure that we're looking at what's currently required, not what necessarily was done last year in our first lockdown experience or for children during the autumn term who may have been at home isolating or poorly. So we'll talk a little bit about more at the moment, in a moment. But also I think for me, it's really about governors understanding what decisions school leaders have made about the remote education offer and how they've made those decisions. Because we're not, as governors, making those choices ourselves. We're finding out why leaders have done it. Pam, can I come to you just about that very important point about the changing national expectations about remote education? Because I think, like everything else to do with lockdown and changing rules, etc., education is no exception. So would you just talk us through and talk governors through what are the DfE expecting schools to do, and you know, what do governors need to listen out for, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the DfE published a document called Restricting Attendance During National Lockdown last week, in fact. And within this document, it sets out revised expectations for remote education. And these are heightened expectations as from previously. So in the previous lockdown, there was an expectation that children were engaged in some kind of learning, but now the DfE have really sort of outlined very carefully what they actually expect, and it is absolutely an expectation. So there's been an increase in the expectation that schools will provide 3 hours of teaching for Key Stage 1, 4 hours for Key Stage 2, and the equivalent of 5 hours in Key Stage 3 and 4. So that, of course, can be made up with both recorded or live teaching, as well as time for pupils to complete their activities. Now, remember that those recorded lessons don't necessarily need to be recorded by school staff, but staff could look towards resources from Oak Academy, BBC Bite Size. We've already mentioned some of those. Other sites are available. There's also an expectation for schools to select a digital platform for remote education to be used consistently across the school. Now, Education Durham can support schools with this if necessary, but the majority of schools are well on their way with developing the use of a digital platform to communicate with families at home. Another change in expectations is that schools should have a system for checking daily whether pupils are engaging with their work. The expectation previously was that this was a weekly check-in, but now it's a daily check-in. So schools should then work with families to find solutions to their lack of engagement, and maybe I would suggest that schools have a graduated approach to this. Finally, there's an expectation that schools identify a named senior leader with an overarching responsibility for the quality and delivery of remote education, and schools should ensure that they publish information for parents about their remote offer on their website by the 25th of January. Again, Education Durham have developed some remote learning guidance and documents to support schools to ensure that they've thought carefully about each of these aspects of the expectations that the DfE have set out.
Thanks, Pam. There's a lot of information there, isn't there? So it was really useful. Thank you for signposting that DfE document. And I know that head teachers will have that Education Durham guidance, because I know Pam, we've put some hours in on that, haven't we, over the last few days, getting that all together. Diane, I think we'll try and make sure that goes out with our chair's email as well. I think that would be a really good idea. Gosh, Pam, you mentioned so many things there. I mean, I think for me, one of the really big changes here is that move from, you know, we had to take an emergency response, didn't we, last March and April, to children not being in school. This is a planned and more sustained approach to make sure that children are learning and are continuing to get you know, the advantages of the great education our schools provide them. So that daily engagement check, it's a bit different from just saying, is everybody okay? It's actually checking that children are engaged in work. And there are sometimes some really technical reasons why they're not. So in a moment, Paul, I was going to ask you to talk about the kind of safeguarding angle of this. But Diane, I wondered, you know, I know your governing bodies have been hearing things, haven't they, from head teachers about just some of the issues that affect families
One of the things that we've heard quite a bit about, obviously Pam mentioned about, you know, lack of engagement and checking up if pupils aren't actually taking part in their online lessons. But the feedback that we've had that, you know, we do need to appreciate is that sometimes within the home environment, you know, if parents are working from home, you could have maybe two pupils in school, you know, trying to get onto their various school websites. So connectivity is often an issue. Pupils can't actually get onto the internet to get onto the lessons themselves. So that's something that we do have to take account of and appreciate that sometimes, you know, with the best will in the world, it's just not possible for the families to actually access all of the time.
So I think a really useful thing for governors to know from school leaders is what checks have school leaders undertaken about children's connectivity. Is it to do with it? Is it to do with them having a laptop? Is it to do with the Wi-Fi not being sufficient? Do they not have sufficient access to a quiet, safe space to work? And the guidance that Pam just mentioned actually is very different to last year, because one of the things the government have said is that if children don't have those things and a place to work and materials to work with, then actually they should have a place in school. They're vulnerable. They're vulnerable to not succeeding in school, aren't they? So that's quite a big change. So it's useful for governors to get that kind of survey information, Diane, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things as well that a lot of schools are actually doing with regard to connectivity is, you know, some families might not necessarily have. We mentioned about laptops, tablets, that kind of thing. So schools have arranged for, you know, a variety to be made available.
Paul's been dealing with this for months. So Paul, I think this would be a really good point for you to come and talk to us a little bit about that, what governors can expect. But then would you also talk about, I think lots of governors are concerned about safeguarding with more online education happening.
Yeah, I was briefly going to mention a couple of things. The DfE keep changing on a regular basis what's on their website, and they're trying to develop more offers for schools to get equipment. Sometimes it does, perhaps doesn't appear as rapidly as schools like, but it's constantly changing. They're also provided links so that schools can get extra data. So if families are trying to work, you know, using data on a mobile phone, then there might be access to free data there. And governors might want to just ask with the school as to whether they've checked any of those additional things. Some schools have lent out equipment as well to help support pupils, which is a really good idea. But it is worthwhile, again, finding out about what strategies the schools have got to make sure the equipment is used safely. Again, what you'd expect to see probably is, a learning pack, which explains to parents about the ways that their children can be safe when they're using the equipment online. And again, Education Durham's provided templates for that information. One more thing, I suppose, linked with safety, because safeguarding and safety is obviously key to all schools, is thinking about whichever learning platform the schools set up. An awful lot of schools are using learning platforms that are being set up by the county council or by alternative providers. But it is worth having that oversight into whether it's being set up safely with the relevant security settings to make sure the children's accounts are safe and they can't accidentally drift into areas they're not supposed to. So again, it's worth just reviewing and making sure that the school's confident in whatever systems it's using have been set up, thinking about the children's safety and the safety of children's data.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something the safeguarding governors, we know they've been really interested in. And I know that we've, you know, provided quite a lot of additional support to schools around that. So I guess that kind of leads into the next area we wanted to talk about this morning, which is about the role of governors in relation to remote education. One of my schools was talking to me yesterday, and just as they have got a staff champion for remote education, they've created a temporary link governor for remote education. So a governor with a specific link role, just because the governing body there just felt there was quite a lot to sort of get to grips with in a short space of time. So having a dedicated governor who could really be the point person was useful, but also so that senior leader in school knew who the governor was, because I think we are really conscious of just easing whatever time pressures and burdens on our senior leaders in school as we can, because it's just an incredibly busy time. So if we think about that role of the governors then, I mean, Diane, is there anything governors shouldn't be doing in relation to remote education, do you think?
Yeah, I think governors always, I mean, we do emphasise this about all monitoring visits to school as well. You know, governors should be involved strategically. You're not getting involved in an operational side of things. So there's no expectation that you're going to be setting things up or, you know, actually being involved in the lessons themselves. Yours is a strategic monitoring role. So we should be looking at how things are being delivered, what impact they're having, most importantly. So, yes, we've got the system set up, but what, you know, the questions that we should be asking around what, yes, we've got it set up, what impact are they actually having? And we have developed a few sort of question sheets that some handy information with questions that governors can use when they're arranging visits to school. It also emphasises as well that, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, trying to lessen the pressure on staff, because we are conscious that, you know, staff have an awful lot on the plate at the moment. So it's just a gentle reminder to governors that, you know, we need to follow the agreed visits protocol and make an appointment, you know, get in touch with the head teacher, make an appointment that's convenient for them, and appreciate that, you know, it might not immediately be possible to go into school, but to, you know, to go with whatever the head teacher has available.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that it's the other great thing about the remote connectivity, isn't it? That obviously that conversation with maybe the lead for remote education can take place through Zoom or Teams.
Take
less time for everybody, which does make a contribution to people's work, life balance and well-being. And Pam, you know, just getting to that nitty gritty then of holding leaders to account for, you know, the quality of the remote offer and then, you know, the quality of the implementation, and of course, most importantly, its actual impact. What kind of things do you think governors can usefully do?
Okay, so I think really, in terms of governors maintaining that strategic overview, really, they've got to know and understand why the school has chosen to deliver their remote education in a particular way. Why has the school chosen to use a blended approach in terms of textbooks as well as educational apps and live teaching? Why is it that we've chosen that? What is it about our community? And what do the children in our school need? Governors should try and understand the main challenges that families and staff face with remote education. It's not all about how, you know, what challenges the families have. The staff have challenges as well, in terms of they may be working from home, they may be home educating their own children, they might have a lack of technology, or they might have elderly relatives to be looking after. So in terms of what are those challenges for our school for that remote education? To find this out, governors are going to have to ask questions to leaders. And of course, you can have those conversations with the head teacher, or as we've said, the senior leader who's got the responsibility for the remote education, who might actually be doing some more intensive monitoring of the remote education, and the link governor, or maybe it's the curriculum committee, or whoever is going to have that responsibility from the governing body to liaise on remote education, can have that overview. And I think it's also very important for governors to support school leaders to address any challenges. For instance, agreeing to spend extra additional money on IT hardware to support families. Governors should also ensure that those details of the remote education have been published on the school website by the 25th of January. I keep saying that. And if not, ask why. Not in a very challenging way, but it might be that those leaders need support to achieve that. What are the circumstances around why it hasn't been done, and can governors support in any way? Thinking about the impact of remote education, it might be that governors have to think about, on the return to school, discuss that impact about the remote education on the pupils' progress. Can governors monitor the remote education by asking questions of leaders. They can hold conversations with class teachers and have that overview, perhaps of parental feedback.
Yeah, that feedback question is really important, isn't it? Because of obviously, one of the key roles of governors is about that stakeholder relationship, isn't it? And an awareness of the community of which we're in. And, you know, governors are uniquely placed to know that. Paul, I think you've got...
I was just going to say, really, it's worth governors knowing as well. There isn't really, as the evidence comes out, there isn't really a right or a wrong way of doing this. It's likely to be about a real mixture of technologies. And it's probably important about the pedagogy and the learning rather than the actual lump of kit that you're using. I think the other thing as well is the school's remote learning offer is going to continue to evolve. The chances are that what the school's doing now will be different from what the school's doing in a few weeks' time. And so it starts to evaluate that evidence of children learning, then probably the approach to what the school will do will change. So don't look for an easy solution. I don't think there is an easy solution. It's a really difficult problem. And what schools are doing is going to keep changing as the systems improve.
Thanks, everybody. I mean, I think one of the most useful things I've seen, I was joining a meeting earlier this week with a school in one of our neighbouring counties, actually. And it was very interesting there that the chair of governors and head teacher had talked about having an additional section to the termly head teachers report to governors, which actually just included the head teachers monitoring, an account of the head teacher's monitoring of the remote offer, so that the head teacher had included some evidence of what she'd found when actually observing some of the videos being used by the children, that she'd listened in on a live lesson, and that she'd asked senior leaders, they'd monitored the work that had been handed in and the quality of advice that the children were getting, as you would expect in a daily life in a school. And so it was really useful for governors to just to know that there was still a monitoring and quality assurance process going on, even though actually in that school only 60 out of 1,500 children were actually in the building, but everybody, the senior leaders could assure the governors of what was going on. Pam, I'll come to you and then we'll start to bring things to a close.
Yeah, I think it's also useful to bring those subject leaders and those heads of departments into that monitoring role to ensure that you've got consistency across your subject, and to lessen the burden on head teachers or the person who has the responsibility for remote education.
So to kind of round things off, I wonder if we could each think of one question that we think it's really useful for governors to ask. If governors only have time or chance to ask one question, what do you think would be the most useful one? I'm going to give you some thinking time. You see, I'm recalling my teaching skills there. I'm giving everybody a bit of thought time as I glance around. I'll give you even more thought time by saying the one I think that I would want to ask in my school as a governor. My mind always goes first to the children who are perhaps the most at risk, and who might find things the hardest. So I would probably ask a question first about, what can leaders tell us as governors about how our looked after children are managing and engaging with this very, confusing world of remote education, especially if they're living in a complex situation and they're not coming into school. Many of our looked after children are coming into school. So my first question would be about, how are we supporting our looked after children in the remote education period? And, is it working? Are those children, for example, making gains with their reading? Are they looking like they're gauging gaining their GCSE physics understanding? If I think about my own experience yesterday here at home, so that would be my question, because that's the way my mind always goes first. Do I ask for a volunteer? Go on, Paul.
I'm going to cheat, because one of my other roles sometimes is doing websites audits. So my question would be, have you updated the information on the website for the 25th? And actually, reading through that will be really useful, because it'll give you an immediate understanding of what the school's remote education offer is.
Oh, that, Paul, do you know what you did there? You proved that you've been listening to Pam throughout the podcast as well. So that was lovely. But I bet you've stolen Pam's one. Diane, what do you think governors could do? What would be your question, do you think, that you'd suggest for governors?
There are so many options available. I think one of the things I would, if I was a governor, I would like to ask, if what kind of feedback the school has actually sought from the parents as to whether or not they've found the lessons and the, you know, the things that are available, whether they've found them useful or whether they've had any particular problems. Because, you know, the school may be thinking that, oh, yes, everything's great, we're delivering these lessons. But if parents are stuck, or, you know, if they need a little bit more help with teams, for example. You know, so I think, if have they done any feedback exercises, you know, just to see people's opinions?
That's interesting. And of course, the other side to that is, of course, how are they gathering children's feedback and children's experiences? Because that is the thing which we need to know, because that's what tells us if they've learned anything. And as teachers, that's what we really want to know. Pam, I'm going to let you have the last question.
Okay, my question would be around well-being. How does school leaders ensure that they can monitor and gauge the well-being of pupils and staff? I think that's really important during this time, during this period of lockdown. How are they engaging pupils in terms of their well-being and their mental health? What provision is in place? What are schools doing to support that? And as I say, that goes for staff and for pupils.
And Pam, that's so important, isn't it? Because I think in the rush of we must provide 3 hours or 4 hours or 5 hours a day, actually we're thinking about that timing. You know, what planning is there around, for example, children, young people getting out in the daylight for some fresh air if they're learning till 3:30 and then have some homework to submit, etc., etc.? I think there's also governors sort of perhaps having a look at an example of a timetable and thinking, is there time here for a family to make and eat lunch here between a lesson here and a provision there? You know, and I know Paul and I have had this conversation, because he and I with teenage children know it's very important that there needs to be dinner made and that they get a chance to eat it. I'm very aware of time, and I'm keeping an eye on the well-being of the team here doing the podcast today, and that they've given lots of their time here. We've probably chatted longer than I expected today, actually, but I think it's a big topic, and I hope, governors, you've been able to fast forward or pause and finish whatever you're doing, whether it's the washing up or whether you've just got your feet up and listening to us on a morning. If you would like to know more following this podcast, the DfE website has got some really up-to-date and useful evidence that you can have a read of. And it's always worth visiting the Educational Endowment Foundation's website, the EEF, or the EEF, as we like to call it, when we're in County Hall, because that's the big evidence base. And if you're really interested in this area, or if you are the link governor for remote education, worth having a little read there. As I mentioned, Diane, I think we're going to be sending out some support notes, aren't we, with agendas. And very soon, of course, as our new offer for Governor Hub and the Key open up and governing bodies can sign up for that, there's obviously lots of really up-to-date information on the Key and via Governor Hub as well. And Diane, I think you've got another good link for us.
Just we're just really excited, actually ridiculously excited, about the Governor Hub and the Key opportunity that we've managed to get for schools. So just to remind you, we have got a couple of sessions available which chairs might like to attend, just to get a bit more information about those, because one of the offers that we've got, if people sign up by the 31st of January, you can actually get earlier access to this.
It is. There's free offers. And if you're a governor and you've not, your chair knows more about it, and also your clerk can advise. So thank you so much to Paul and Pam and Diane, and to Donna, who it bears with us so much with all the technical side of things, and we'd be absolutely lost without her doing all those kinds of things. We will be back in February with a February podcast. If there is something you would like us to talk about, or a governance topic you'd like us to explore, do drop us an email at governortraining@durham.gov.uk, because we'd really rather the suggestions for these topics came from you. This one actually did come about because the governor said, could you do one of those about remote education, Gabrielle? So we did do this one in response to a governor request. So that's the way I'd like them to be. So I wish you all well. I'm going to ask everybody to say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, that was very grim, wasn't it? That was very grim. If I was in a pantomime, I'd make them do it all again. But they are all waving, governors. I promise you. I promise you the panel is waving. Thank you so much. We look forward to hearing you again soon. And as always, if you have any questions about governance, contact your chair, contact your clerk, or us at Governor Training. And we hope to see you either at Governor Training or actually even in person as soon as it's safe to do so.